And good morning, and thanks for tuning in to another edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is the Wednesday, December 21st, and it is, guess what, Chris Bessler, my co-host.
It's the winter solstice.
It's the first day of winter.
Yes, indeed, and the shortest day of the year.
That's right.
And for the record, we have 8 hours and 19 minutes with the sun up today.
Okay.
But from here on out, every day gets a little bit longer. So that's the thing we're celebrating, I think.
Yep. And we're here today for the morning show. We are live in the studios, and I'm Susie Prez, one of the co-hosts, and Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Yeah. Good morning.
Again.
Yeah. And we have a good show today for folks. Today, we're going to be talking about an issue that has popped up just only recently, and that's the Sunnyside Cedar Grove and efforts to preserve that. It's facing a logging operation right now. And we have three folks in to talk about that. We have Ali Hakala. Did I get your last name right?
Ali Hakala.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Jeff Pennington. Say hi,
Pinnock.
Jeff. Pinnock. And Rich Del Carlo.
Good morning.
And we're going to be talking about what's going on Sunnyside Peninsula with that cedar grove here in just a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting that a group of folks, it's quite astounding how many people have come together for this, Friends of the Cedar Grove, and it'll be fun to find out what it's really about and how it got started. But before we do that, let's hear about the weather from the National Weather Service we have today. Currently, it's 28 degrees. We have a high of 30 and partly sunny, so we'll get a little bit of that sunshine that I saw yesterday today. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low of 21, no precipitation. Thursday, mostly cloudy with a chance of snow, about 30%, high 32. And Thursday night, here comes the snow, hopefully, for the skiers, low of 25 and a 60% chance of precipitation. All the way into Friday night, 70% chance, only about 1 inch possible Friday night, but it will give a little bit of snow for what's coming up is Christmas Day. Christmas Day, it's high of 26 and partly sunny. That's the weather forecast.
That's the weather. A couple other things going on outside. As we mentioned, today is the winter solstice, and it is the shortest day of the year. In the past week, we've lost 3 minutes of daylight per day. And as we go forward now, we're going to be gaining daylight. So we're at the they're at the very nadir, if you will, of the winter. Every day is going to be a little brighter. Up at Schweitzer, they've had 8 inches of new snow in the last 48 hours, none overnight. But they have a nice base now, and I think they have pretty much the whole mountain is operating. And that's probably all I have for what's going on outside. Now, what's going on inside?
Well, inside, I know one thing I want to talk about is the Christmas Carol at the Panada. We had them in last Wednesday for a little bit talking about it. This was a locally written, produced, even the music is local and original. And from what I've heard, I didn't go. Did you go?
I didn't go, but we have tickets for Thursday.
I'm going Thursday, okay, too. It's astounding.
Right.
And they're having a lot of fun. And so it's Thursday night and Friday night at 8 p.m., that's at the Panada.
At the Panada.
It's called,
yep,
Christmas Carol, a new musical for the whole family.
Yeah, and it's spelled Carol with an E as in a woman's name. So it's a different take on the classic Dickens play of the same name, but different spelling. So,
and the whole, and a bunch of the crew and cast is going to be here on the Thursday edition of the morning show tomorrow.
Yeah, so, we'll talk about the show. So, mm-hmm. That'll be interesting. Other things going on you may not have heard, but Sunday is Christmas.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Time to get start your Christmas
shopping.
I know.
I better get going.
Of course, everybody will be celebrating at home for that. But on Friday afternoon, December 23rd, you could find Santa Claus taking a few runs up at Schweitzer, and you can go up and ski with him. That's an annual tradition up there. And otherwise, it's a fairly quiet week this week, and I think we could get into our discussion with our guests.
I think that would be a good idea, Chris. So this is, by the way, the KRFY Morning Show at 88.5 KRFY Panhandle Community Radio.
And again, we have Ali Hakala. I'm sorry. Jeff Pinnick and Rich Del Carlo here. We're going to be talking about the Sunnyside Cedar Grove. And Ali, let's start with you. Tell us what, frame up what the whole issue is here.
Sure. I'm a homeowner, one of the adjacent landowners out on the Sunnyside Peninsula of this forest. And there's a 40-acre parcel that's connected by a corner to a 12-acre parcel. And then those are both off of a 26.5-acre, what used to be the Ponderosa Park. This is all on the southeast tip of the Sunnyside Peninsula.
It's like right near the, where the boat launch is.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Just up from there. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah, I walk my dog back there all the time, and I started seeing some marking going on the trees and some flagging going on. And so I started asking questions and making some phone calls. And I was told that they were planning to go in there and manage it, to log it. And so I started asking more questions and invited some folks out to come and help me understand what was going on back there, why they would want to cut this forest, which seemed to me to be very healthy and a great stand of really big trees. So I had I had Jeff come out. Jeff's a civiculturist. Some wildlife biologists and foresters come out and try and assess this forest and tell me what was up.
Okay, so Jeff, grab a microphone. Can you describe, you know, a little bit more about what the forest is?
Well, like I say, Ali got me involved in it to go take a walk in the woods and look at this and just, you know, give my assessment of what I felt the management was and whether that was maybe the right thing to do on this parcel of ground. And so we looked at it, and this stand, you need to describe this stand so people can, you know, your listeners can get a feel for it. This is your classic older, mature western red cedar, western hemlock forest type, closed canopied. It's kind of dark underneath. It's sparse vegetation. It's your, you know, it's like being at Ross Creek or Roosevelt Grove, though this is not, probably would not be considered old growth. That's a very political definition. But anyway, it's an older, mature, very healthy stand of trees. And that's predominantly the 40-acre piece. The parcel's divided as a 12-acre piece that Ali talked about. Has a little bit different structure. But this stand has very little forest health issues. Fire danger on a site like this is rated really low. And I just retired after 43 fire seasons. So I've been involved on an incident management team and fighting fire most of my career. And this is one of those places where you knew you could control fire, because there's not the dry fuels. There's very little fuel, understory fuel. So, you know, there's no real nagging reason to be into this stand to treat it. This stand is stable. It could probably live for another 200-300 years. So that's kind of where this parcel is at. It's not at any threat from any natural forces right now. And right now it's just the only threat is opening the stand up through logging. And, you know, and we're dealing with a Idaho Fish and Game. If this was private forest land or Idaho Department of Lands, where, you know, their mission is forest management, they want to manage every acre. And that's the one thing I want to bring up on a parcel like this. This is a unique parcel that sits in a peninsula, Sunnyside Peninsula, which is, there's very little other public land. It's all privately managed
on
land,
Sunnyside Peninsula.
Yeah. So the landscape level, because usually when you look at things, you look, how does this piece fit in the larger landscape? And the landscape is developed. You know, private logging, varying degrees of timber management or development going on. And this parcel hasn't had any activity for probably 50, 60 years or more. And so, you know, it is providing the diversity within the larger landscape, because it's unique. These low elevation cedar groves are, there aren't many of those left.
So the idea is it's worth preserving, is
correct,
what I'm hearing you say. And the Idaho Fish and Game, their argument for going in and selectively logging, or what kind of logging were they thinking of doing?
Yes. Yeah, it's a selective harvest. It's it's called a shelterwood, which is a regeneration harvest. You're doing it to provide, open up the stand to provide for natural seed fall regeneration or planting. And I don't think they have any intent of planting it. They're going to let it go to natural. Well, once you've opened a stand up, you can change the environment. So that nice, cool, moist environment is going to change. It's going to open up. It's going to be drier. You're going to get potential for noxious weeds coming in anytime you log. That's just a hazard. And in a cedar stand, cedar's unique in that it's a shade-tolerant species. And when you open it up really quickly to sun, those needles can't react that fast. Their stomata can't open, and they just can't react, and they get this thing called sun scald. You've probably seen it if you go around and you see these, you know, cedars that have turned red. It can kill them. It can kill a tree. It doesn't always, but it can create mortality. So that's going to stress the stand, and then it's going to regenerate to cedar, grand fir, brush. Now it's got ladder fuels. So now it's open, it's drier, it's got ladder fuels, fire hazard just went up. So all that is part of that change that'll occur on this site. And you know, right now this site doesn't, you know, it's not screaming that it needs to be treated.
So you said they're planning a shelter wood cut.
Correct.
What does that mean in practical terms? Like, how many trees do they leave in shelter wood?
It's variable. It's a shelter in that they leave enough trees spread out through the stand to provide some structural shelter and shade. Right now it's 75% cedar, and I couldn't tell you trees per acre. I don't have the inventory data, and we have not seen their cruise data, but it's probably going to be, they're probably going to leave 30 to 40 trees per acre left. So they're going to be open. The crowns are going to be open. They're not going to be closed anymore.
So one of the things you just mentioned, Jeff Pennick, is the forest health is pretty good. There's not really fire danger. So why go in, and it's not even accessible. They're going to have to get access through private land. Is that correct? And so why go in and do this? What's their argument?
Argument. They've actually been right up front letting us know. At first, they were talking about forest health, and they were talking about fire danger, and they were talking about all the traditional forest management objectives.
Habitat
and all that. But the bottom line got down to, when we finally pressed them, that no, they need to come in and get the value out of this stand so that they can go off and do... take this money elsewhere and do other habitat improvement or conservation work elsewhere. In the big scheme of things, you know, that meets their objective. But on the small scale, it's going to change the scope of this stand.
So let's ask Rich a question, Rich Del Carlo. Rich, I know you're involved with birding and wildlife issues. What kind of wildlife does the stand currently support, and how would this shelter wood cut change that?
Well, right now it supports a large diversity of birds, mammals, amphibians, plant life. It's not like if we log it, there's something is going to, become extinct there or whatever. It's a unique place, given what has gone on in the area, the whole county, from the standpoint of diversity of bird species that would kind of need that shady areas in the cedars. It just supports a more diversity than would be in the surrounding heavily logged areas.
Mm-hmm. What kind of species birds use shady forest like that, old growth forest, older growth forest.
Yeah, potentially northern goshawk, barred owl, northern pygmy owl, varied thrush, Pacific wren, several species of warblers, Townsends, yellow rump. There's a really nice, almost boggy area in there that would support probably northern water thrush. And, you know, it's a potential roosting area for bald eagles. Every time we've been out there, I've seen great blue herons. Even though that's not obviously great blue heron habitat, they still sometimes roost in those trees. You'd have swifts potentially nesting in big snags under the bark. Of course, chickadees, nuthatches, just a big variety of fairly common birds, but somewhat unique to that type of habitat.
So if they open it up with a shelterwood harvest, some of those species would be displaced.
Yes.
Because it wouldn't be the type of habitat they need.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was speaking with a wildlife biologist that had come out, and, you know, he talked about, well, okay, if you cut the trees, the birds will just go elsewhere. But the thing is, they can't just go elsewhere because that habitat is actually, you know, similar habitat other places is already occupied by similar other species. So you can't just say, okay, we'll move you over here. There isn't a place for them to go. Once that's removed, it's irreplaceable.
And the other thing that happens when you disturb areas like that is you create more of a transition zone, a border, where birds and animals are more susceptible to either parasitism by cowbirds or predators, even in the form of dogs and cats that are in the area. So, you know, it does definitely change the biodiversity in there.
Mm-hmm. So are both these, there's two lots, one's 40 and one's 12. Are both of the lots owned by Fish and Game?
They are.
And how do the other adjacent landowners, Ali, feel about this proposed harvest?
Sure. There's six of us adjacent landowners. Essentially, all of them except for one couple that moved there recently a couple years ago, everyone has denied them access for the logging. One couple that's relatively new here has granted access from the 12-acre parcel to the 40-acre parcel.
Okay, so that's how they would be able to even get in to do the logging and remove the logs.
Exactly, because it's connected at a point, so you can't go through a finite point. You have to go, you know, you have to gain access from one of the other properties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's in the last couple of years, that area has changed drastically, just, you know, from the development, minimal development, but also tremendous natural disasters that we had those big winds out there, and the Sunnyside Peninsula, especially in that area, got completely
hammered,
where you did have old growth ponderosa pines and that were in that park on that south facing slope that just got
trees were fallen and broken off.
Yes.
I remember driving by, and that was in 2014.
Since then, they've, you know, of course, they've made it safe and cleaned up the debris in there, and so it is that stand has completely changed there. And that was actually a protection for other parts of the peninsula. And, you know, this area that we're talking about is on the north facing slope. So it is more protected from those tremendous southern storms that come up. And that actually adds to its uniqueness as well because of the massive changes that have occurred just right in that area.
It sounds like there was a lot of trees down during those storms. However, more logging would be devastating to continued health of the forest. I want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show with Chris and Susie, and we're in the studio with Ali Hakala, Rich Del Carlo, and Jeff Pennick, who are friends of Sunnyside Cedar Grove. And we're talking about a group that has formed to protect this cedar grove out on Sunnyside and all the details and things that are involved. And one of the things I want to get to eventually, if not now, is the timeline that's involved in, is it your goal to stop this logging by the Idaho Fishing Game? Or is it to change the course in some way? And what is the timeline involved? What's their timeline?
You know, at this point, we'd really like to open up that conversation with the agencies, with Idaho Fishing Game. We'd like to halt the logging on this parcel because we really feel that the protection of this unique grove is essential for our community. Perhaps also that it's a more sustainable way of utilizing our natural resources. You know, we're not against logging by any means. You know, I grew up in a logging family, a family supported by timber dollars. And I worked in the mill myself, my brothers, my mother, my father for 40 years. And yeah, trees grow great in northern Idaho. It's an amazing natural resource. And we should absolutely, utilize that for our economy and for families that work in the mills. At the same time, some places are perhaps better left intact. We don't have a lot of this anymore, and we can go in and continue to manage other forests that have been managed. And protect these for our growing population.
So what you're saying is this is unique. This is something out of the ordinary and worth taking a deeper
Absolutely.
Look into. So your goal is to try to work with Idaho Fish and Game to bring that picture to them so that they could take that consideration into their decision making.
Absolutely.
And Jeff, it looked like you had something to say about this particular grove of trees.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about wind damage and potential for wind throw that has occurred already. We've all seen it. And that's one of the other impacts that you can have once you open up a stand. Obviously, you allow now wind gets inside in the stand. And these are large trees, very large crowns, just like sails, and a very shallow-rooted tree species. So there is potential for this stand to suffer wind damage. Even though it is on the north and east aspect of that, wind could still get in that coming up over the ridge. And we didn't talk about it, but there is a half-acre piece right at the top of this property, the 40-acre, next to the people who granted access, that is a huge pocket of wind throw.
Well, it's about a third to half an acre, yeah?
Yeah, it's not very large, but it sits right in their view shed. That's how they view this stand through this massive blowdown. So it looks terrible, looks like a fire hazard, and something needs to be done with this parcel, this section
that,
of
that,
it.
That part of the 40.
Yeah, yep. And we have offered to take care of that for the fishing game, mm-hmm. Clean it up, pile it, reduce the hazard, and potentially even provide firewood for local groups, maybe mm-hmm. Habitat or veterans or somebody. And we would do that on our own dime. Mm-hmm. And that's what we would like to propose to them. And that would take the hazard away from this stand as far as potential for fire.
So what's the status of your talking with the fishing game at this point? Are they responding to these concerns? Would be one question. And the other question is, it sounds like often a harvest is done in order to improve forest health or to reduce fire damage, and those aren't actually going to take place with this one.
And Chris, you're right. That in the big scheme of forest management, yes, harvest and multiple species stands are a good thing on the larger landscape level. But that doesn't mean every acre needs to look like every other acre. That's the key here. We don't need this piece to look like the rest of the Sunnyside Peninsula. That shouldn't be anybody's objective. And so the value of this is it's diverse in that it's not species-rich diverse as far as trees like the peninsula is, but it has its own resilience by not being disturbed. So there's, you know.
The part of the Sunnyside that I'm most familiar with is that which you see just driving along the road, and it seems like it's mainly ponderosa pines and fir trees. I don't see a lot of cedar as you drive along which would be the southern side of Sunnyside. So what you're saying, Jeff, is that the cedar grove gives diversity to the peninsula in terms of those tree species.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is cedar on the peninsula. Cedar has a habitat requirement. You know, it's moist sites, which are typically not solar, a lot of solar radiation. So north slopes, all those things. Low elevation, well, not necessarily low elevation, but just moist sites. So there is cedar on the peninsula, if you ever drive the backside of the peninsula, but it's all in a managed condition. So it's mixed species stands with some large cedar. But the uniqueness of this is a stand of predominantly large cedar, and we need to let you know there's a 51-inch diameter Douglas fir in this stand, which in my career, almost 40 years here working on the panhandle, that is the biggest tree I've ever measured. It's not the biggest tree Doug fir in Idaho, I know that, but it's the biggest one I've ever measured in my career. And that's a large tree when you stand up next to it.
It's an Oregon-sized Douglas fir.
Yeah.
Where Douglas fir really flourishes.
Rich, you had asked about the timing of the of this, and we met with the fishing game and the IDL foresters several weeks ago, and we talked about these very issues and concerns, and it looks like the sale will probably go out to bid, if I'm right, sometime
early summer.
We asked them if they were willing to allow us to do a what's called a bioblitz out there, which would be to basically document, catalog virtually every living thing on the property. And we're not expecting to find a completely unique plant, but what we are expecting to find is a tremendous amount of diversity. And so they are actually on allowing us to do that. And part of their management goal for fish and game land is hunting and hunting access. And this piece of property is not, even though there's a ton of deer on it, is not really accessible and really even viable for hunters because, and they admitted this, because it's surrounded by basically private property and because of the access. And, one thing that we are hoping to create here is some public access, which would be actually really pretty minimal hoop jumping. And, for almost an outdoor education kind of a situation where school groups could come out, where expanding the bird watching possibilities on the Sunnyside Peninsula. I did some a little bit of research, bird watching versus hunting, and there's 80 million people in the United States that are bird watchers.
Wow. You're talking about people that don't just see a bird occasionally. These are folks that go out with the intent of spotting birds.
Yeah. But and that's mostly within the kind of enthusiastic realm, which is people that plan trips around bird watching, or but there's a bird watchers tend to be a little more have a little more income, a little more time. People spend 110 days a year birding versus hunters spend 15 days a year hunting. There's 12 million hunters in the country, 10 million are deer hunters. That generates 22 billion. Bird watching generates $41 billion.
Wow.
And that's like recreational, people going to areas that's, intentionally to do bird watching.
But within that, they're hiking, they're doing things. Mm-hmm. And they're going out to dinner.
They're going out to breakfast.
They're spending time in motels.
So it's not just the license to to hunt that generates the $22 billion for hunting.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
It's the whole picture.
So, and there's more, I think, accessible dollars through ecotourism. And within the ecotourism, avatourism, birds, is the greatest segment. Mm-hmm. And the Sunnyside area, Sandpoint, and the Sunnyside area in particular, is a destination place that people come from, certainly surrounding areas, but all over the country and all over the world. And people access this, the information and the kind of the sightings through eBird and tours that have come. So there is the potential for this to become more of a real public place, not as opposed to just limiting it to a few folks that
I'd like to come back on that exact point, but I think we're going to take a musical break here, give you guys a breather.
That sounds like a good idea. It's very interesting, and I'm glad that we have the opportunity to hear from your group, the Sunnyside Friends of Sunnyside Cedar Grove, and to hear more in just a moment. But I think it's time to hear Neil Young sing Who's Gonna Stand Up? And we'll be right back. This is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Stay with us. This is The Morning Show. And that was Neil Young, Who's Gonna Stand Up? And this is the KRFY Morning Show with Chris and Susie on this Wednesday, December 21st. We have guests in the studio. We want to continue the conversation about Friends of Sunnyside Cedar Grove with Ali Hakala, Rich Del Carlo, and Jeff Penick. And again, thank you for being here with us today and telling us about this. It's just starting out. You're getting your feet on the ground to kind of a grassroots effort to make sense of what's the potential going on out there at the Cedar Grove.
Absolutely. We have a Facebook site that we've put together on it. It's Sunnyside Cedar Grove. If you punch that into your Facebook, if you do Facebook, it has several pictures on there, both in the fall as well as in the winter with beautiful snow on it. There's a great drone video that was made, and there's both a short version and a long version. But from there, you can really gain a picture of how big some of these trees are, the density of these trees, the closed canopy. There's both an aerial shots as well as some interior shots. The drone video does have, the drone mechanism itself has a kind of a wide angle. So some of these trees don't look as big as they actually are. So you have to go to the pictures to see that in scale, like next to a person standing next to it. But
and that's the Facebook site called Sunnyside Cedar Grove. And if you like the site, you'll get postings.
Absolutely.
As they come up, or things that you might be doing as a group and how to access that group.
Yeah, we've got a petition that we've created, and it's been floating around here for the last couple of days. We're also going to put an electronic petition up. So if you go to our website, then you'll be able to get a link to that petition. And we ask that if you are in favor of protecting this forest, you absolutely come and sign it. Go on the petition or go down to iCarts and sign the petition there.
Just a second. What is the petition for exactly, basically?
The petition is for protecting the 52 acres on the Sunnyside Grove. For stopping, any process of logging and protecting it.
And the petition is directed to the Idaho Fish and Game.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. So as you've described it, and actually we have a map in front of us here, which I imagine people could see if they go to the Facebook page, they can get a map of where it's at. The parcels are basically landlocked. There's no there's no public access, and in fact, the fish and game themselves would have to get access through an adjacent landowner's property to get on there and log it. What are the prospects of creating a public access there someday?
I think that's definitely workable. You know, we've been speaking with some of the area educators, for starters, and they are very interested in using this as a field campus for experiential learning, which is a growing, you know, thing within our schools. Understanding that people are, you know, kids are increasingly disconnected with nature, so getting them out there on the ground, learning, walking in these forests. I myself have had groups of kids out, and the Kinderhaven kids, as well as some of the other school grades. And it's amazing to see these kids walk through this forest, see these big trees, and, you know, mess around in the, you know, the moss and check things out. You know, this is a natural forest that isn't parked out. It's not all cleaned up and looking like, you know, like if you tripped over a stick, you might hurt yourself. No, this is, you know, this is a natural forest with incredible diversity that's going on. And just to watch these kids is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely magic in these big old mature old growth forests. That I was out at Ross Creek Cedars just about 3 weekends ago, and it was amazing. You're walking around these giant trees, and it kind of gives you an idea how small we really are. Mm-hmm. I want to circle back on that question, Jeff, to something you mentioned. He says, technically, this may not qualify as old growth. Well, how old are the trees there? And tell us, what is the technical definition of old growth?
I'm not going to touch the technical definition of old growth. That becomes a very politically charged question. The agency I work for, the Forest Service, had one definition. I'm sure the state has a different definition. But basically, this is a 100 to 130-year-old cedar stand, and so it's mature by all. Nobody would argue with that it is a mature, older stand, and it has potential to progress into anybody's definition of old growth. So it's what people would consider potential old growth. But Chris, like you said, it has that same feel. It's not Ross Creek, no, mm-hmm. but it not has yet. That Cathedral Grove feel when you go there, and you have that same sense. So there's a lot of things. That's one thing I learned in my career is, you know, there's a lot more than, you know, trying to stick your finger on every acre and make an imprint. You mm-hmm. know, I don't think that's the attitude. And I'm, like Ali said, I've been a total supporter of responsible forest management my whole career. I was a logger early in my career. So, you know, I understand both sides of it, but this is one of those places that makes sense on a lot of levels. And on the educational level, I volunteer with Friends of Scotchman and do winter tracks, which is a kids in the woods training. And I tell you, when you see kids out there learning something new and touching things and sniffing things and feeling, it's very experiential and tactile. And it's really important. Mm-hmm. And I work with Kiniksu Land Trust, and their grant that they got for Clark Fork High School, which is the tracks program. And I've helped with the outdoor education portion of that and at high school level. And I think that's a huge benefit that this, like Ali said, that this could provide, is give those local kids in this area a place to go and get that feel mm-hmm. without having to travel all the way to Roosevelt Grove and Priest Lake mm-hmm. or up to Ross Creek in Montana.
And, you know, you mentioned a couple groups there that have been in the news recently. Friends mm-hmm. of Scotchman's Peak has just got word that Senator Risch is going to introducing a bill to designate wilderness in the Scotchman Peaks. Mm-hmm. And then Kiniksu Land Trust just last week announced a campaign to acquire a property right near Sandpoint called the Pine Street Woods. So it seems like there's a little momentum perhaps to set aside some properties that would be utilized for other purposes than resource extraction.
Absolutely. I think, you know, both of these things, the Scotchman Peaksville as well as the Pine Street Woods gained by Kinnexie Land Trust, I think those are huge evidence of growing consciousness about preserving our forests. People really are saying, hey, we don't have a lot of this anymore, these big old stuff. And yeah, let's hold on to it. Keep managing what we've been managing. You know, there's place for that as well. But hold on to some of these gems that we have.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at our landscape here in the between the two mountain ranges, is this Sunnyside Cedar Grove kind of unique? And what I'm hearing you say is it's unique and it has the potential to be one of those places eventually, such as Ross Creek, if in fact it is preserved at this point in time.
You bet.
Yeah.
Ollie, you had mentioned during the break that you were going to be arranging some tours for groups possibly to take onto the property.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I invite people to come and check it out. Because it is a landlocked piece at present, you need to have access through one of the adjacent property owners. I am one of those. I'm on the north side of the 40-acre parcel. And if you send an email to sunnysidecedargrove@gmail.com, then you can get information on upcoming hosted tours. Basically, come into my place and let's go take a walk in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a pretty fun place to check out. It's great in the winter, spring, summer, and fall. So mm-hmm. I encourage you all to come out. It looks like we're going to be doing these on Sundays during the middle part of the day. And we'll have to keep it down. We can't have 500 people out there because there just isn't parking access just yet. But yeah, go ahead and send an email and come on out and see it.
Mm-hmm. And you can find that on Facebook, Sunnyside Cedar Grove. Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds pretty cool. I'm going to sign up.
Great. Come out. We'll have a picnic.
I'm going to sign up too.
Picnic
now,
Sundays.
In winter, and you'll actually be starting some of these in January, right?
You bet.
So in winter, would you need snowshoes or?
You know, because of there's less deep snow in these big forests. A lot of it hangs in the trees. This also makes it easier for deer to get around as well as us.
Mm-hmm.
It's what they call snow interception.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, at present, you don't really need snowshoes. Some good, sturdy winter tromping boots is a good idea. If we get a big dump, which we might just get this year,
mm-hmm.
Snowshoes may not be a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, it's very nice to hear about what you're doing. I commend you for the effort. Grassroots efforts can succeed, so stick with it. As far as I can tell, it's a worthy cause whenever there's a tree involved, because once they're down, they're down.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you can do. So we've been talking with Ali Hakala, Rich Del Carlo, and Jeff Pennick, friends of Sunnyside Cedar Grove. And you can find out more on Facebook at Sunnyside Cedar Grove. And thank you so much for coming in today to the KRFY Morning Show.
Thanks, you too.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Mm-hmm.
Go spend a nice solstice evening under the cedars.
I think
yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, come on out, everybody.
Well, we're going to take a little musical break and come back with a little bit more of the morning show. And this is an appropriate song. It's Bruce Springsteen, This Land Is Your Land. We'll be right back. Stay with us. That was Bruce Springsteen, This Land Is Your Land, and this is 88.5 KRFY, and it's the morning show with Chris and Susie on this Wednesday, December 21st. We just said goodbye to our guests here in the KRFY studios, friends of Sunnyside Cedar Grove. That was an interesting conversation. It was good to hear about what's going on.
Yes, and if you didn't catch that or you want to pass it along to somebody else that didn't get a chance to listen, we will have it posted as a podcast on the KRFY.org website. Probably later this afternoon, so you could shoot people to that. And as well, you can get more information about the whole subject if you go on Facebook to Sunnyside Cedar Grove to learn more about what's up with that piece of property out there.
A couple things I want to mention tonight. No, I'm sorry, Thursday night and Friday night. Again, it's the Christmas Carol at the Panada. It starts at 8 p.m. They still have tickets available. And this is a musical for the whole family based on Dickens' classic, and that's where the similarities end. It's an original play written. The music is original music written here in Sandpoint, and I hear it's fantastic. A couple other things I want to mention. Of course, what's coming up at the Panada on January 13th and 14th. And I'm hearing ticket sales are going fast, but I don't want to scare anyone. But if you're interested in a really fun night and evening with Viggo Mortensen, the star of Captain Fantastic, will be at the Panada introducing his movie, Captain Fantastic, with questions and answers after the film. This is a benefit fundraiser for KRFY Community Radio and Team Autism 24/7. We have to say thank you very much to Mr. Mortensen for coming in and wanting to support these two nonprofit organizations with this fun evening, both January 13th and 14th. Tickets are available at Eichardt's Pub, Evans Brothers, KRFY by calling 265-2992. Syringa Cyclery, that's on the corner of Oak and 6th, and Panada.org, places you can get tickets for the January 13th and 14th Viggo Mortensen evening.
And Viggo did a similar evening, what, 2 years ago, was it?
Oh. It was 2012.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But it was really a cool evening. They showed his recent movie at that time. And
that was called A Dangerous Method.
A Dangerous Method. It was about Sigmund Freud, actually. Mm-hmm. Very well done movie. Of course, he's a great actor. But then he came out after the showing and hung out and answered questions from the crowd. And it was really a fun and interesting evening.
A little
look behind how they make these films and a chance to talk to Viggo.
Yep.
And other things going on around town? Susie, what is happening around here?
Well, let's see. You tell me, Chris. Well, it's winter. It's the solstice. There's got to be something happening.
Well, of course, there are things happening. Tonight there is Magic Wednesday at Jalapenos. They do that every Wednesday with the magician Star Alexander. He roams around and performs. If you haven't been there to see it, it's amazing. He does close-up magic tricks.
And it's real magic, too.
It seems like real magic, but is it?
I don't know.
And also tonight, 5 Minutes of Fame is happening at 6:30 p.m. It's an open mic at Cafe Bodega. That's inside Foster's Crossing. That's at 6:30 p.m. And then tomorrow, you could do this before you go see Christmas Carol. McDuff's Beer Hall is having beer hall music from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. with Holly McGarry.
Yay, Holly's back in town. Just in time for a Christmas break with Holly McGarry. And if you want to hear, I've interviewed her twice now, maybe three times. And if you go to krfy.org on the podcast button over on the right-hand side between the notes or live and local, there's some interviews I've done with her. And the last one was so much fun, just to see where she's come from. The 14-year-old playing guitar in her bedroom to really playing some big venues back east and graduating from the Berklee School of Music.
Yeah, and she writes her own music. She's amazing, actually. If you haven't heard her, you should go do that. And I'm going to jump ahead and let's talk about things that are going on for New Year's Eve. We just got a couple of minutes here, but there's actually a ton of things happening on New Year's Eve. If you're thinking about what you're going to do to ring in the new year, David Raitt and Baja Boogie Band is going to be playing a concert at DeLuna's. That's on the 31st. That's New Year's Eve. Or there you can go see the Riff Hangers New Year's Eve Bluegrass Bash. That's at McDuff's Beer Hall. Also, Schweitzer is having a bunch of parties up on the mountain. If you're a skier, that's a great place to go. And then one of the biggies is there's the third annual Hive New Year's Eve Ball, and they're going to have the Pimps of Joy Time there. That would be if you haven't been to the Hive, you want to go check out that. It's an amazing venue.
It's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just about out of time. I have a song queued up, the Beatles, Penny Lane. And just want to remind you, tomorrow on the KRFY Morning Show, Jack Peterson and Jim Healy will have Becky Revac and cast from the current Panada production, Christmas Carol. And so stay with us for the rest of the day, Otto's Eclectic Mix. And, you know, Chris, this is our last show for Before Christmas.
Before
we
Christmas.
We have one more before the new year. But we do want to say thank you to our listeners, and we hope that your holiday is merry and bright and full of good cheer.
Yes, we do. Have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. And this is the Beatles, Penny Lane.